Okay, welcome to this special show. We are recording for the, for Plain Talking UK, as we do each week, but this is a special show that we are going to be doing to release just before our 500th show. And this is going to be a special, very special show indeed, because we have got a guest joining us on this week. So we're going to welcome Armando, as always, onto the show. Armando, hello.
Hi, everybody. Happy to be on the show, not live today. And as I was just saying before the show, I am recording here in the hangar, so you're going to hear airplanes behind me. And also, we are recording this on the day of the total eclipse here in the U.S. So if you don't hear from me, it's because the aliens have landed, I've lost connection, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I hope to see some footage of that, Armando, perhaps for our listeners.
Fingers crossed.
Be good, be so good. And also joining us on the show tonight is Andy. Hello, Andy.
Hello again. I'm back for show.
Back.
I'm not in anywhere as fancy as Armando. I'm sat in a hotel room in wet Gatwick. So he wins today.
In another hotel room, I see, Andy.
Yeah, yeah, another hotel room. But no, lovely to be here. Looking forward to getting the chat going as well.
I know, it's good, it's good. So this is going to be a special show tonight, as I said. And we are going to be chatting to a very special guest indeed. Now, if you follow or may follow her on Instagram, she has a Instagram page, Raya in the Sky. We'll put the links in the show for this. And she's a digital creator inspiring future pilots from around the world, and especially women in aviation. And she's also she's an Airbus A320 pilot as well, which is always good to hear. As Andy's, he's happy. He's so happy about that. And so it gives me great pleasure indeed to welcome onto the show. It's Raya.
Hello. Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm pleased to be here.
Good to have you on, and thanks for joining us on the show tonight. It's great to have you on. We're going to have a chat with you about your career and kind of how you got to where you are now. But how are things for you? I'm guessing it's busy in the industry at the moment for you.
That's right. It's super busy. March has been busy. It's been crazy. I've only been sleeping and flying, it felt like. April is a little less busy, but still, I mean, summer's about to come, so summer is always busy. So busy flying and doing not much else.
So Raya, we're going to go back to where it all began for you. So where did it all start? Where did aviation grab you?
Wow, big question. So I wanted to become a pilot since I was maybe 12 or 13 years old, and unlike many others, I didn't have any key moment, or like visiting the cockpit after landing, saying hi, and then knowing that's what I want to do. I never had that. I just knew, like from the inside, I knew that's what I wanted to do for a living, and that and only that, which I guess can be a blessing and a curse. And what I did after finishing school is I planned to go to flight school, because that's how you get your license here in Germany. I'm German. And in Germany back then, there were a couple of private flight schools and one big flight school that was owned by an airline. And that's where I wanted to go. And the reason that I wanted to go there is because they would pre-fund your entire training and then offer you a job right after training and have you pay it back on a monthly basis, which sounded pretty much like a jackpot, and turned out it was a jackpot. But there was a catch, and the catch was that they had very, very strict assessment centers and tests to enter their flight school, and they only had a pass rate of 4%, which is pretty intimidating. And the other catch was that you only had one chance to apply. So one shot, and if you fail, that's it. Go to a private flight school, take out a huge loan. And I personally didn't have the means to do that. I didn't have the financial background or the financial security to do that. So that was not an option for me. So I really relied on that one chance. And wow, that was a tough time. And I was very young. I was 18, 19 at that time. And I've been working so hard, and I studied and prepared for that test and tried to believe in myself and hope for the best. And thank God it worked. I passed and I got accepted into that flight school. And I did the training. I did my Airbus A320 typewriting right after that, which was in summer of 2014. So this summer marks my 10 years flying the A320. And yeah, looking back now, I still consider myself extremely lucky to have been given that chance. But I now know that there are plenty of good flight schools out there, and a lot of them work together with banks that grant loans, especially for or specifically tailored for student pilots. And I guess what I learned throughout the years is that there are many ways to make yourself your way into the cockpit of a passenger jet.
So what was the training aircraft that you learned to fly in originally, Ohio? Because for most, it's a 150 or a 172 or maybe a PA-28.
It was a Beechcraft Bonanza. I did part of the training in the U.S. Wow. And yeah, that was pretty neat. I love flying it, but it's been, oh gosh, way more than 10 years. I think 12 years, 13 years since then. So I don't even think I can fly it now because I don't do a lot of recreational flying. So
was it a traditional CPL or MPL course that you did?
It was an MPL course. That's right. MPL, yeah. I did the PPL part in America and then the MPL part here, and flew with my MPL through full time, and then did my ATPL at one point in the simulator. Yeah.
Fantastic. Do you have MPL courses over in the States?
I was just going to ask, what is an MPL?
So a traditional CPL course is where you go through your PPL and you do your CPL, your multi-engine, your IR. The MPL, which is the multi-pilot license, is designed to get somebody from zero to in the right-hand seat of an airliner. So it chops out a lot of the single engine flying work, and there's a lot more simulator flying to prepare you to fly the aircraft, in this case, the 320. A lot of airlines in Europe use that system now.
Yeah.
No, we don't have that here in the US. Mm. You could theoretically do your PPL and your commercial in a multi. You don't have to start in a single engine. I don't know that I've ever met anybody that has ever done that. Our traditional path is you do a private, mm-hmm. an instrument, a commercial, and then a multi-engine add-on to the commercial.
Right. You work your way up, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In your experience at the school, so we talk on the show a lot about ab initio programs and how they may be the only way forward to help people that don't have the necessary means. Sorry, I have these birds mm-hmm. here. Just terrible in a hangar.
That's okay.
Was it indeed a 4% success ratio? And if so, what happened to your peers?
Well, that was just the assessment test before flight school, because it was an airline-owned flight school. They would basically test you to be suitable for their specific company. So that's why they did the test before entering flight school, because they wanted to keep the dropout percentage as low as possible. And that's why a lot of people failed those tests, because they were very specific and very strict. And then once you were in flight school, they were close to no dropouts at all. So, yeah.
Okay.
It was just before that, because pretty much anyone could apply. So, that's not to say that everyone is like suitable.
I have to ask, why? Can you remember your first solo, the very first time you soloed?
I can.
Because for me, I'll never forget the day I soloed.
Yeah, that's right. That's something you'll never forget. And I will say, my first solo was in at an airport, which was in the desert. It was really hot. It was in summer. And it was, I think, 110 degrees or so Fahrenheit. That's around 44 degrees Celsius, which was right at the limit of the performance limit of the plane, like 1 degree more and we would have to have canceled the flight. So it was extremely hot, and I was so excited and so nervous, but I think I was just busy and super focused and did it. And back then, you know, no one had smartphones. We all had those little, I'm not sure, do you say digicam in English?
That's what, like a point and shoot.
Like, right. And that's how my my flight instructor recorded my first landing. And thank God it was kind of smooth. So yeah, I remember that. And I will never forget. It was a very special moment, as for everyone, I assume.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You remember your first or your solo, Andy?
Yeah, it was the anniversary of it 15 years ago last week.
Oh, wow.
Long time ago now. Yeah. Out in New Zealand. Fabulous. It was a lovely day.
New Zealand.
Well.
That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah, that's where I did all my training back in the day. Anyway, it's not about me.
So you obviously you passed in your flight school. You got obviously your license and stuff. Mm-hmm. What was kind of the goal from passing your private pilot's license to? Did you want to go straight to an airline? Was there any? Did you ever consider cargo? Because we have some guests on the show who fly cargo. Or was it you definitely wanted to, you're more of a people person. You want to see passengers on an aircraft.
Well, I actually throughout the past few years, I considered cargo flying because you're looking at different career opportunities and aircraft types to switch to. And I considered cargo flying and I gave it some thought. I came to the conclusion that it's not for me because I love everything about flying passengers. And one crucial aspect about that job that I love very much is having responsibility for people. I need to be, I need to be in charge of people. And I don't have that as much flying cargo. And the other thing is that I love the whole idea of the hospitality thing on board, like this service that you provide and the experience you give someone flying with you. And that's what I like about the job. And so I think that never say never, but for now I absolutely enjoy flying passengers, and that's what I plan to do moving forward.
I think for me, as a passenger who sits in the back mostly, unless I'm in the US with Armando and sitting up the front, one of the things I miss as a child, especially as a young child, is going on the flight deck of aircraft when you're in the air. But I know that Andy said before with the airline that he flies with, if they're delayed or on the ground, if there's a few minutes before pushback, that he's happy for young children to visit the flight deck and kind of see what goes on. Is that something you enjoy or you do yourself?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, there are many perks about flying cargo as well. And I know many cargo pilots and they all love their job. But those are the special moments that I absolutely love. And especially if it's young girls, I always keep telling the captains, let them come in because the little girls need to see what the big girls are doing. So, I absolutely love that. And we will show them all the lights and That's very special every time, yeah.
So I think you mentioned something there where we're going to get into that a little bit later. I think the social media and the influencing the next generation of aviators. But I want to go back to sort of your first 10 years of flying. And there's two things that kind of popped into my mind, not having come from an aviation family, was did you have a mentor, someone that you looked up to, someone that kind of took you under their wing? Unintended. And then in those sort of first 10 years, what was your biggest, most influential learning moment, your aha moment that said either I could do this or maybe this isn't for me? Or so those are kind of in the first part of your career, the two things that I would like to know about.
Sure. I do not come from a family of aviators. I'm the first one in my family wanting to go into aviation or having wanted to go into aviation. And I did not have a mentor at all. Looking back, I wish I would have had one. I started flying gliders when I was 15 because I was quite ambitious early on. And that was the first thing that I could do. I'm not sure what it's like in the US, but you can fly gliders starting at the age of 14 here in Germany. So that's pretty young. And I started when I was 15. So I always keep saying it's just a little joke, but I knew how to fly a plane before I learned how to drive a car. Mm-hmm. So that's my one little flex there. But I did not have any mentors at the flight club. There was the flying club, there were quite a few teenagers that wanted to go into aviation too, that wanted to become pilots, but I did not have any mentor whatsoever, no role model, let alone female ones. I didn't know any pilot. And looking back, yeah, as I said, I wish I would have had that. And I want to be that for somebody out there now. So that's why I try to give back through social media.
Yeah.
You said you had a second question.
What was your
aha moment, right?
Yeah, either an aha moment or what we call a teeth breather moment where you go, oh, this isn't going to turn out well, or...
I'm trying to think about a specific moment. I don't think I had this one specific moment, but I had this big insight one day. How do I put this? Well, the first couple of years, I really tried to prove myself in the role of a first officer. And I did not quite know how to do it other than putting on a mask and trying to fit in that role with everything I thought that role is supposed to be. And there was, looking back, it was incredibly exhausting. And it took me years to find out that I can, in fact, as simple as it sounds, totally be myself. And that doesn't make me a worse pilot at all. Actually, it's the opposite, that being authentic really helps me being a good crew member and adding to the team. And as I said, it took me years to find that out. And it's kind of sad because I wish I would have known earlier, but I've put so much pressure on myself because I had imposter syndrome a lot, and I would doubt myself a lot, and I would only push me to the limit to be like the best version of myself. I would only allow the best version of myself to go into the simulator, and I would watch my colleagues, male colleagues, just have a bad day in the simulator and being fine about it. I'm like, well, it's a bad day, no big deal. And I was never like that. And today I think I'm a little more relaxed. I think part of it comes with experience, but that was a big aha moment for me. And as I said, it sounds so simple, but I think especially for us women, it's really not. It's really not, because, you know, society is always doubting you and everyone's always doubting you. Not in my company, not my colleagues, no one I've flown with has doubted me, but I think it's so internalized that it's hard to get rid of that.
Yeah. Andy, would you agree that I think a lot of us, in order to be the best first officers we can be, we kind of turn into chameleons, don't we? Where we,
right.
Absolutely. Because you never know, every day you're flying with somebody different and you're trying to be this perfect version of yourself, to please everybody, keep everybody happy. And I totally understand it. When you move seats, that all goes away because you're the captain, mm-hmm. you're the one who's setting the tone. But yeah, totally understand where you're coming from with that, especially imposter syndrome when you start as well. Yep, I've been there.
That's so interesting. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, and you're so right. I think once you move to the left-hand side, it becomes a little easier. I mean, I'm sure you face different challenges now and challenges I might not have any idea of because I'm not there yet. But that's just what you said. There are so many different styles of leadership and leading that team and doing things. And the one advantage that you have as a captain is that you have found your own style. And at the beginning of the day, you know how you're going to do things. And I don't know that when I first meet you. Yeah. I have to find out throughout the day. And I have to find out every day with a new captain. And I think that's maybe the difference. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. It's hard work. It really is.
So, so there I am, brand new first officer Armando, and you're Captain Raya in the Airbus, and we're meeting for the first time. What is the tone that you like to present when flying with a new person?
Well,
that's a hard question, I know.
First of all, yeah, that it kind of is, but I'm just going to say whatever comes to my mind. Well, first of all, I personally, I'm not a person that says things like, earn my respect or things like that. I respect everyone and anyone, like, unless you really screw things up. But I respect you the moment we meet, so you, no need to prove yourself. And I would probably, as a captain, try to create an environment that makes you feel relaxed and makes you and puts you in a position where you feel like you're allowed to make mistakes, because we all do, and you don't need to cover them up or sugarcoat them or anything, because it's super natural and it's okay to do that. And I guess I expect the same thing from you, seeing my mistakes, of course, correcting me or saying something when you see something. But other than that, I'm not into that, how do you say it in English, like that formative hierarchy, like pointing to the stripes and being like, I'm the boss here.
Yeah.
I prefer it to come more naturally and to be authentic in your leadership and be credible in your decisions and in whatever it is that you say. So it's kind of hard to say, because I'm not a captain, obviously, but you know, they say captain training starts the first day you're an FO. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. You are a captain. You're a captain in training. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that we on this show like to remind us about, especially with our listener base, is first officers have earned every right to be there. And, and when you start getting to your level, right, the A330s, A350s, which we haven't talked about yet, but, when we start getting to those levels, every first officer, almost every first officer, has been a captain of something, either here in the U.S., you know, you work up from your regional airlines. Most first officers, at least here in the U.S., have been captains of, and our regional jets are, you know, ERJ-195s. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That is so interesting.
Yeah. So we try to dispel the myth on the show that the first officer is somehow unqualified. No, man, you've been through training. You got the type rating. Mm-hmm. You're fully qualified to be there. And we'd like to remind people and listeners on the show that it is a team up there. It is that old school thinking, hopefully, is going away more and more.
That's right. And that's what I keep telling people who are not in aviation, who are so used to the terms pilot and co-pilot. I keep telling them that these terms are kind of outdated, because it comes from a different time, you know, where the captain was like the boss and there was no messing with him or her. Oh, actually him back then. Yeah. And that is more captain and first officer and how decisions are made in the cockpit. And that us first officers actually get to fly the plane, not only in emergency, but we do.
It's important to remind people of that. That
absolutely,
we actually switch
absolutely.
Legs.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
So looking at your training, Raya, from the first, when you're PPL, when you started to learn to fly, for me, when I was learning to fly, the books, the tests, the exams were the hardest part of learning to fly, in my view. Flying the practical side, flying the aircraft, was a lot, you know, I enjoyed that so much more. Did you enjoy both aspects, or did you enjoy the flying, or was it the books?
Yeah, first of all, I have to say that I don't know any student pilot who found the theory training easy. It is super hard. And I mean, flying is obviously the fun part, but it can be really hard too. Because I think flight training is super expensive, right? So they're not wasting any money on you getting better and better and better at something. Once you can do it, they move on with the next stuff. And that was really hard on me, because I personally had the impression that I was just barely getting there. And then there was like this new maneuver I had to learn, and I felt like I can't even do the old stuff. And so that was a lot of pressure. But coming back to your question, the theory training was really hard too. And looking back now and connecting the dots in hindsight, I would say that all has like this meta level of training too, because it all teaches you resilience and teaches you pushing through when things are not fun and things are really hard and you don't want to do them anymore and you're exhausted and there's no giving up. You really need to push through. And that's what I keep telling student pilots who are exhausted or who need some motivation on social media too, that resilience is a key skill of every pilot. No one wants pilots who just stop working when things are getting really, really messed up. That's when you need people to constantly be there and fight until the very end. And that's what you learn in flight school through that training. And that's kind of a positive outcome of that, I would say. But back then it was really hard, especially when you're young and you have so much self-doubt. I absolutely know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you have to have your mind set on the goal that you want to achieve rather than going to the clubs and the pubs and partying.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. You should be super focused on your training. Yeah.
Armando.
So I kind of want to start going into the social media stuff a little bit. And Andy, I don't know if you want to go technical or more about the Airbus stuff, but I apologize for the, it's actually a large nationwide flight school that has taken over this airport. The social media, so what inspired you to start the social media, to create the content? What do your other pilots think about it? And lastly, have you had anyone reach out to you that has been that, oh my gosh, I just made a difference in somebody's life type moment?
Yeah. Thank you for asking. So as I said before, I'm coming close to 10 years in aviation now, and I feel so incredibly blessed that I get to be, to do that job. And it's still my dream job. I'm still super happy to be able to do that every day. And you know how they say, with great blessing comes great responsibility. And I felt that more and more throughout the years. And I thought about the idea and played around with it a little bit to go into mentoring student pilots. But I don't know, it never played out right, I guess. And then it was only last year, I'm not even a year in it, actually. I started this social media account, the Instagram account, to give back, basically, because as I said before, I did not have any mentors and no one I could talk to or ask questions when I started training, or even before that. And I want to be that for somebody out there. And only when I started it, and now I'm, 11 months in, I think, it's crazy how much demand is there and how many people need this. Not me specifically, but need someone to talk to or take away their insecurities. And not only women, specifically women, but not only. And I absolutely enjoy doing that, being there, giving back, answering questions, and just also normalizing women in aviation. That's what I try to do too, because there are not many role models out there. I don't consider myself a role model. That's for others to decide. But I want to normalize women in the cockpit of passenger jets. And that's why I show myself at work. Not me as a person, me as Raya, but what I stand for. And I think it does make a difference. And I'm surprised myself by how much. But sometimes I have, as I said, especially women or young girls texting me. And I had this young woman the other day, we're friends now, actually, she's 28, she's working in sales. And she told me that she has dreamed of becoming a pilot all her life, but she never dared to do it because she didn't consider herself good enough or worthy. And now that she had followed me for a couple of months, she has decided to enroll in flight school and she's working on her LTPL now. And that made me tear up. I was so happy to hear that, because that's exactly what I'm trying to do every day. And it's an amazing experience for me too. So it's very rewarding.
Yeah. Over 30,000 followers you have on your Instagram account. That is amazing. What an achievement.
Thank you.
In 11 months, that's phenomenal. And it shows that your type of the stuff that you put on social media is really high quality and really well produced. And it shows there's a demand for what you are basically selling to the world. Look, you can do this.
Thank you so much. And I'm very glad because my airline is very supportive. Obviously, everything that I show online is approved by my airline. And they see the potential and they're very in support of it. And I'm very grateful for that. So, yeah.
Well, that's even better. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's always easier. Thank you. Always easy when you can do that. You should do more, Andy.
Me? This is a face for radio. This is not a face for social media.
I have to ask you, Ryle, what is your, because obviously a lot of your videos on your social media are kind of during the day and a few at night. What is your favorite time to fly? Is it nighttime or during the day?
So I'm actually a night owl. So I like to start out in the afternoon because you can enjoy the sun above the clouds and then see the sunset slowly but steadily, and then have the golden hour where everything is just so beautiful in that beautiful light. Then you have the, I don't know if you guys know that, but there's the Earth's shadow. You can see like when the sun sets, the Earth will cast its own shadow and you have this this dark stripe right over the horizon. That's really beautiful. And then you see the stars emerge and the moon perhaps, and everything unfolding one after the other. And it's so spectacular every time. I can't believe how blessed I am that I get to see this during my work time. That's amazing. So I enjoy that very much, that time of day, like afternoon to after sunset.
Armando?
I spent most of my career flying at night. We used to take off at dusk and just enough time to let your eyes adjust. And then we flew on NVGs, night vision goggles, for most of our flying. That was most of my career. So I guess that counts as both. So night turned into day. Now, nowadays, flying corporate, we like to fly during the day. We don't like to touch clouds. If the weather is marginal VFR, we like to cancel. So.
You can cancel, actually? It's not scheduled flights or like flights that need to happen?
No, we have a very unique relationship with our principals and the owners of the aircraft. We're speaking of kind of being assertive is when you have someone that is very wealthy, that is your passenger. In our industry, in the corporate side of the house, it's you do everything that you can to get to yes, and you have to exercise that same sort of decision-making process of when am I going to say no, because these people are not used to being told no. Right. So luckily, when you're flying for a scheduled airline, you know, it's a conversation between you and dispatch and your co-pilot and the company. There's different kinds of pressures in corporate aviation where you're going to do everything in your power, but you can say, we are not proficient. We don't do Cat 2 ILSs to minimums ever. We do it once a year in the simulator.
Right.
So we're certainly not going to start doing it today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And most owners, most passengers will be okay with that. If you're trying to tell them, hey, it's for your safety that we don't want to go, we don't want to be in that weather either.
So. Yeah, I totally understand that, because it's, you know, if it's not safe, it's your job to say that. I was just surprised about the not touching the clouds part. So you're really like cautious. Okay.
Maybe right. Climbing up, but like no, we generally don't fly in anything other than VFR. I mean, we're at 41,000 feet, so we're usually above everything. But if it's a terrible day, we'll just reschedule for the next day.
I'm jealous of the four.
Me too.
39 max. Yeah, right. Andy too.
Everyone is. Trust me. Now, right. Obviously, you try and promote as much as you can, you know, women in aviation through your Instagram page. Do you think that the industry is still a tough one for female pilots to join, to get into? Or do you think things are becoming more easier now?
Both, I would say. So tough, yes and no. I'm still seeing a lot of self-doubt in young women that want to go into the industry, but I think that's more of a bigger issue in society, because you know, young girls are conditioned into that self-doubt, like to feel that self-doubt because they are often doubted. And that's a bigger issue. But I see that a lot. And I think it's still shocking how low the numbers are. You know, the by the way, do you say IKO or ICAO?
IKO, yeah.
IKO, right? That's what we say in German. The IKO published numbers about like the percentage of female pilots in commercial aviation. And in 2016, it was 3.6% globally, which is shocking. And in 2021, which is 5 years later, it was 4%, which on the one hand is good because it's more than a 10% increase. But on the other hand, it's absurd how low these numbers are. And there's, from my point of view, there's no valid explanation for that because there is no difference in competence between men and women. And we know that from all the like the assessment tests I talked about earlier. We in Germany, we have what's called the DLR test. It's a general assessment test for all flight schools now, and it's something that airlines require. And we know that there is no difference in performance among male and female applicants. If anything, girls are performing better. So there is no difference there. From what I know, there is no difference in terms of accessibility. So the only thing that I can think of is self-doubt versus self-confidence and a lack of role models. That's what I keep saying. Representation matters. And if there's one thing you want to do and that's your dream and you don't see anyone even remotely looking like you, acting like you, talking like you, resembling you at all, doing that thing, what you want to do, that can make a huge difference. And it can make the difference between like pursuing your dream or abandoning it. And that is huge. And I think it can't be overstated how important that is for young people to have that representation, to have those role models, and to have someone to look up to and to say, you know, I want to be like him or her. And that's what I think the industry lacks, because we're here. There's plenty. I mean, not plenty, but there's a lot of female pilots and also young pilots and pilots who are, you know, who look all different kind of ways, who are feminine, who are just the way they want to be and they want to look like. And that's what we need to show those young girls, because it tells them, one, we are here, you can be here too. And two, you can come as you are. You don't need to put a mask on. You don't need to fit into a mold or conform to a stereotype. Just come as you are, because you're qualified and you can do this. And I see so many young girls out there doubting themselves and asking themselves every day, wondering, am I enough? And I think we need more people telling them, yes, you are. And I'm here to be part of the change and to tell them, yes.
Good. You're doing a great job as well. Why, yeah, very good job.
Thank you.
Would you say, Andy, in your airline, obviously you fly for a big, large European airline, would you say there's more women women pilots now within the airline that you work for?
From when I started, yes, there are significantly more, and there are more coming. And through cadet groups that I see now coming through the training center, there's more women as well. So the message is getting out there. It's great, because as you said, there's no difference in competency in anything. It's just a lack of just a lack of knowledge that they can do it.
Right. I have young girls every day texting me, I didn't know women could. And that is shocking and sad.
So here in the U.S., we've got probably the longest standing organization being the 99s, who have been around since their early days of aviation. But additionally, Women in Aviation International here in the U.S. has grown. Their national conference, they have regional conferences. Is there an organization, and it could be Women in Aviation International, but is there an organization in Europe, or maybe specifically in Germany, that has kind of taken on that mission?
From what I know, there are some online. I haven't attended any in person. But I know that in the US, there are so many, and it is so great because you guys are doing such a great job at networking and at like connecting people. And I love that. And I see that on social media every day, like all these organizations and all these events happening where female pilots can connect and make friends. And yeah, that's really awesome. But here, I mean, Not so much. There are some, but way fewer than in the US.
Yeah. I think here in the US, the needle has moved. I think we were right around that kind of worldwide average of 3 to 3.5% of women as professional pilots. I think latest figures I saw from Women in Aviation was closer to 5% of professional pilots are women now. So I think the needle is slowly moving, but you know, we always said, I always thought the military was further ahead. Unfortunately, it's not. They're also right there around the 5% mark. But I think there's a lot of awakening happening here in the U.S. Right. that 50% of the population has not been exposed to aviation. And it's not just pilots, right? That's air traffic controllers, mechanics, engineers, operations, dispatch. There's a huge movement to include women, minorities, and underrepresented demographics into these careers.
That's so interesting. Do you happen to know the rough percentage of women in air traffic control? Because I don't know it for Germany, but I know it's way more than in cockpit.
I don't. If I was to guess here in the US, I'd probably say 10%.
Oh, really?
But just based on what I hear daily on the radios. But I'll get back to you before the end of the show.
That's all right. It's just, this is highly subjective, but when I'm flying, the people on ATC that I talk to, I would say here in Europe, it's 40% women, but that's just a rough estimate. Andy, I don't know.
Yeah,
what you would think. Would you agree?
I'd say the same, flying around Europe. Yep. Around 40%.
But Andy, that's not official number. Any official number.
Yeah. So, right, you fly the world's finest airframe, in my opinion. but what's next for you?
So, actually, next month in May, I'm going to start a training for my for long haul flying.
Wow.
I'm super excited. Throughout the past 10 years, I've turned down multiple offers to fly long haul because I felt very comfortable in the 320 and I absolutely enjoy taking off and landing, which you don't do as much flying long haul. But now I feel it's time and I got an offer that I could not refuse, and that's flying the Airbus A350.
Wow.
Which I'm very excited for. So next month I'll start training on the Airbus A330 first. And once I finish that, I'll transition to the A350. And I'm super excited. I'm over the moon. I couldn't be more.
Is the 330 and 350 a dual rating?
It is not, but I think it has to do with training capacities. My ultimate rating will be the 350. And I just briefly stop at the A330 and fly that for a couple of weeks and then move on.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm super happy about it, and I can't wait for it. It's, you know how they say with every change comes goodbyes, and saying goodbye to the wonderful time I had flying the Airbus A320 is kind of hard, saying goodbye to all the nice colleagues, but I think I'm ready. Can't wait.
If you want a command in the future, will it be back to the 320 fleet?
Yes.
Awesome.
We'll be back.
So it's not goodbye. Forever.
It is. That's right. Actually, it's not a goodbye. Yeah, it will be for a couple of years, but But I'll stick with the Airbus. So at least it's going to be the Airbus fleet.
And what are you looking forward to most with the move to long haul? What's the thing that excites you the most about it?
I think it's a less stressful operation, because no matter how long the flight is, once you're there, you're finished. Yeah. And I think that from what I heard, it will be much less stressful, which is good. And also getting to see new destinations, obviously, getting to see the world, because I know Europe pretty well at that point, but not the world, and getting to see new countries. And all the challenges that come with it. I think flying long range might be a completely different challenge or a different style of work, because you don't fly manually as much and you don't maybe think so much about taking off and landing. But I expect it to be more of a management job, like managing fuel, managing alternate airports, managing the cabin, managing passengers or potentially sick passengers or whatever, the weather. So I think it will, the challenges will shift, and I'm very open to that change. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's awesome. It's so good. Congratulations. We obviously keep us posted. Make sure you keep us posted and
thank you.
We're going to start to wrap up, Raya, because we don't want to take up all your evening. But I'm going to ask a question. It's something that I've thought about for a little while now, because you see the videos on Instagram from yourself and various pilots and stuff. When you're at a holding point, just about to line up on the runway, and you see other aircraft either in front of you or to the side of you, is there any airline that you look at, you love, is your favorite kind of other, forget the A320, Andy will hate that one.
Oh, it could be the A320.
Forget the, is there any airliner that you look at, you think, oh, wow.
There is, and it's not the A320, but it is the A350.
Ah.
It's always a head turner. It's just so pretty. And I guess I'm just an Airbus kid.
Is it that always happen, always will be. On the flight deck window.
That's right. That's right. And I'm not very good at guessing aircraft types, but the A350 is always like, wait, what's that? Yeah. it's really pretty. I love that. Yeah. And I can't be more excited to fly it myself.
So cool. Now, we asked a question. Carry on.
Carlos, real quick, because we have the internet available to us. Europe, air traffic controllers, female, are 22%, give or take.
Wow.
And North America is 18%. So.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for looking that up. Okay, so my 40% guess was a little high, but as I said, it was very subjective.
That's all right. Mine was low, so.
Thank you.
So we asked a question to everyone we talked to on the show, Raya. And Armando, obviously, you're gonna ask that question just for a change this time.
Oh, I thought we were going to give it to Andy.
No.
This is going to be a test for Andy to see if he actually listens to the show.
No, you do it. Go on, you do it.
All right. So Raya, this is a pop quiz type thing. We ask everybody on the show the same question, aviator or not, pilot or not, but... If money was no factor and the time-space continuum was no factor and you could fly any airplane in the world, past, present, or future, what would that airplane be?
The Concorde.
Excellent choice.
Good answer. Oh,
not in daily operation because it only had two destinations, but I would have loved to fly supersonic, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Good answer.
Oh, well, I don't know. Maybe you'll have an opportunity with the boom supersonic aircraft, commercial airline being developed. Yeah.
We'll see. A couple of decades to go, so.
You're still young, right? You're still young, right? You're still young.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we are going to wrap up. And firstly, going to say a massive thanks to you, Raya, for coming on the show. Very, 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 very much appreciated by all the team. It's been great to speak to you and to hear about your life, your career. And I think from all of us, all the team here, we want to wish you all the very best for the future. And for the benefit, just in case no one knows, we will put the links in our show notes for the episode. But just in case, where can our listeners find you on Instagram?
My Instagram is called Raya in the Sky. That's Raya with a J. So it's RAJA in the Sky with all underscores in between. That's where you can find me. And thank you all so much for having me. It was a pleasure to talk to you. I really enjoyed the conversation. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Any last words, guys, before we wrap the show up?
Nope. Fly safe out there.
Fly safe out there. Yes.
Safe landings always.
Best
thank
of
you.
Luck. Yeah. Take
care. Thank you.
And take care.
And you.
Keep in touch. Keep in touch.
Absolutely will do. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Well, that was fun, wasn't it, Andy?
Yeah, that was awesome. The time vanished as well. That was really good.
No, it's great to speak to Laya and hear about her. It's quite interesting, actually, I think, to have someone else on the show who's also a 320 pilot as well. Always good.
Yeah, and she's doing great work for women in aviation as well with everything she's doing. Fabulous.
Yeah. Armando's had to nip off. You might have noticed he's gone off to fly the biplane. But hopefully he'll send some pictures. Perhaps we can put them on this episode. You never know. Right. So up next, we've got another one of our interviews from our visit to Dublin for the Drone Summit. And I wish you would have been there, Andy. You'd have loved it. It was so much fun. And we drank loads of Guinness as well, which is also a bonus.
But, well, yes, that would have been nice.
I know. But hopefully, fingers crossed, we might get an invite to go back next year. But for everyone, here is the next thrilling installment from our visit to the Drone Summit in Dublin.
I'm here with Sharon Rossmark from this amazing Women and Drones. Tell us more, would you please, Sharon, about Women and Drones.
Absolutely. So I founded Women and Drones since 2017, and the purpose of our organization is multifaceted. We're well known around the globe for promoting and helping women make business connections and collaborations around the globe. But we also offer portfolio services, including education, training, everything from kindergarten to career, as well as offer drone flight services.
Excellent. I'm guessing you're kind of a global network of...
We've connected with women in 22 countries six continents.
That is good.
Yeah.
So what is the goal, I suppose, of Women in Drones? Is it trying to get more kind of women in the industry flying drones?
Great question. So ultimately, the goal is that when this sector of history is written about this global aerospace of flying drones, or flying robots, I should say, is to make sure that women are critically included in that storyline.
Which is very important.
So everyone knows about the Wright brothers, at least in the States, everybody knows about the Wright brothers. What they don't know that there was a sister that was actively involved and behind the scenes in promoting them and really helping them become famous. So we're here to make sure that the women are involved now, are part of that history without everyone trying to figure out who else was involved in the industry.
So I have to ask, do you fly a drone?
I do. I am a FAA certified remote pilot.
Excellent. How long have you been flying drones?
Since 2016. They offered it in August of 2016, and I took the test and passed in November of 2016.
Obviously the accent, I think you probably get better weather over in the US to fly drones than what we've currently got here in Dublin.
Actually, I'm from Chicagoland. I feel like I'm at home right now.
So you're enjoying, you're acclimatized well.
I'm acclimatized.
For all our listeners, obviously, we do have a lot of awesome women who watch the show and are pilots and engineers and stuff who watch. How can they kind of get involved with what you do here with the Women in Drones?
Very easily. womenandrones.com. We have a variety of products, services, and ways to connect with us.
Brilliant. And the kind of future, what have you got, any good plans for the future as to what you're going to do with the project?
In the future, we hope that when it comes to finding women speakers for conferences, that one, just like we have here, they're integrated into the agenda, where they're not just saying, oh, we need a women's panel, or we need to have one woman at least on a panel. In other words, they're just professionals that are in the industry. It's not a second thought.
And a website for our listeners to click onto.
womenanddrones.com.
There we go, womenanddrones.com. Well, thanks for taking time to talk to us this afternoon. It's great to see you here. And thanks for making the trip as well, obviously, across here to the show for this week.
Thank you, Carl. And yes, it was a great flight across the big pond, and we're happy to come back anytime.
Excellent. All the best for the future.
Thank you.
And I hope you absolutely slam it totally.
Great. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks, Sue. Thank you.
I'll let you know when we get our invite to go back to Dublin next year, hopefully, Andy, and you can make the tour out there with us.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. As long as it's not... Did it snow on you? That's what it did this
snow,
time,
it did
it?
Snow, yeah. Are you a drone person? You ever flown an unmanned aerial vehicle?
I'm currently learning to fly a little one. I won't say the name because there's many companies. Yes, it's sort of becoming a bit addictive, I've got to admit.
Yeah. I just feel like I'm going to crash it. If I've ever had a go, Matt's always trying to enticed me to have a go at flying his, and just say I'll end up either in a ditch, a hedge, smashed on the concrete, or lost forever.
Well, the one I'm currently flying, I don't own, so I best be careful with it.
Yeah. Right, that's it. That's where we're going to bring the show to a close. Thanks to everyone for watching. A big thanks to our special guest as well, Haya. Don't forget, we'll put all those links in the social media or in our show notes for her social media for you to click on to follow her on Instagram. You need to. Absolutely fantastic on Instagram. So that's it for this special episode of PTUK. Andy, thanks for joining us as always. Great to see you. And Armando, he's obviously probably in the air already now, I'd imagine. But that's it. And we'll be back again next week. Say goodbye, Andy.
Bye-bye, Andy.